Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Frank Film Club. I'm Maisie Williams and I'm an actor and producer.
I'm Lowry Roberts and I'm a producer and filmmaker.
I'm Hannah Marie Williams and I'm a casting director.
And welcome to our club.
Well, welcome back to Frank Film Club. I'm Lowry Roberts and I'm joined here by...
Maisie Williams.
Hannah Marie Williams.
That was lovely.
Thank you.
And today we're going to be talking about Boiling Point, which was released in 2021. Directed by Philip Barantini, written by Philip Barantini and also James Cummings. And we're going to be joined by Philip Barantini, or Phil. Don't know what kind of basis we're on yet, but he's going to be joining us later in the episode. But first of all, girls, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm very excited to chat about this movie. It's very different for the sorts of films that we talk about. So,
yeah. But I've been good since the last time I saw you, which wasn't that long ago at all. Nothing's changed.
Fair enough. Well,
nothing new.
I'm glad that you're both good and raring to talk about the film.
Yes.
Okay. Well, first of all, a little bit more information about the success of the film. It was nominated for 4 BAFTAs, 11 Biffers, and it won 3 of the Biffers. So it had like a bloody good time. But first of all, what were your initial thoughts on the film? Yay or nay?
I loved this film. I was taken aback by how much it affected me. By the time it ended, I felt really sad and I didn't expect to feel that way. I thought I was just going to enjoy the fact that it was all one shot and think it was really cool, but then it actually really hit me very deep. And so despite it having these like interesting techniques that it used at the core, I think it was like an incredibly impactful story. And so really, really liked it.
I felt exactly the same. I think the whole like hoopla around the film has been, it's one shot, like this is incredible, and talking about the rehearsal period and all that stuff. So like for us as filmmakers and from like actors' casting point of view, really interesting. And it won the best casting BIFFA.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. So I was really interested in all of that. And I also thought, I wonder how much substance it's going to have,
right?
And how much we're going to be aware that it's like one shot. But no, I think the story and the way that it was all crafted together was like, yeah, really hitting.
Where did you pick this film? What did you think?
I had seen it quite a while ago and I watched it, found it like amazing, but quite stressful. And then was like, okay, this could be a really good one to talk about for many reasons, including like the filmmaking process, but also the story. So then when I came to rewatch it, was a bit like, oh God, do I want to like go through this stress again?
Yeah.
And was kind of like building it up and was like, I don't really know. But then once I started it, I was like, oh no, it really does just pull you in and you kind of forgot about this stress that's going to be, you're going to be feeling by the end of it.
Yes. We were speaking about Uncut Gems earlier and I feel like that's a film that's so stressful. I never want to watch it again. I appreciate it. I loved it, but I don't want to watch it again because it gave me this heightened sense of like, ugh.
Yeah.
But this film, I felt the same about it before watching it for the second time, but actually really enjoyed watching it the second time, maybe even more so than the first time.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, I wasn't looking for like cuts or wobbles or like anything like that. I was just enjoying the story a little bit more.
Well, a little bit more information about how it came about. I mean, we're going to be speaking with Phil later, so I don't want to give away too much, but he came from a acting background. He'd been an actor for 25 years. That's where he'd met Stephen Graham. They're both from Liverpool. And then he like wanted to go into directing and he directed a short, which he asked Stephen Graham to be in. But Stephen Graham was like, no, you make a short first and then we'll see. And then it went really well. And then they made Boiling Point as a short, which was also one shot.
Okay.
Yeah. Same DP, same writer duo.
Smart.
And that was with Stephen Graham. And then he did a feature. And then Boiling Point was his second feature. And he also used to be a head chef in... Well, he was like a chef and then he built up to head chef in London and then Manchester. So he's like come from that background. And I think the film is very true to working in that industry, and like the stress of kitchens is like, yeah.
I'm excited to chat with Philip about this, but I thought that the material matched the one shot nature so perfectly, because it is like, whenever I'm speaking to anyone in the food industry and hospitality, they always talk about like, you're kind of like on show, like from the beginning until the end. And it's like, you don't get a rest, and it's like every table, and that's like front of house. But like, I mean, it's kind of an open kitchen. So it's that sort of way you're like being watched from the beginning to the end. And so the fact that it's kind of shot like a piece of theater where it's like, as soon as you start, like you can't stop until the end. Like it really mirrors the way that like the industry is kind of set up anyways. It's like the one shot thing got you in the door, and then it actually ended up being insane. So you don't leave thinking about it, oh, it's a one shot. You go, what an incredible story. And also, can you believe they did it in one shot?
So I definitely would have watched this film regardless of it being one shot. I think that did make the viewing a bit more urgent to me, but I think the cast was so amazing that I would have watched it anyway. I thought Hannah Walters, I really like her as an actor, and I would love to see more of her. She's married to Stephen Graham, did you know?
I had no idea.
I did not know that.
Well, you had no idea.
But she is amazing. She's absolutely amazing in this. I love. I did think that there were a few moments in the acting, very, very few, where I was like, if this had been multiple takes, I feel like they would have redone that take. But because I know it's one shot, I'm like, cool, great, keep going.
Which bits? Name and shame. No,
yeah, I actually, there's moments, and I felt the same way.
Really small, yeah. But just moments where I'm like, oh, I just remembered that we're what it is. So let's talk about the acting. So starring Stephen Graham and Vinette Robinson, and then, well, has like a massive stellar? What's the other word?
Stellar cast.
Stellar cast, yeah. And it has a stellar cast.
Ooh, Stella.
But I've got to say, well, Stephen Graham, obviously, amazing.
Yeah.
Vinette Robinson, I hadn't seen her in anything before, and now I want her to be in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Hannah Walters, like I said before, any thoughts, like, what were your thoughts on the casting then?
It was perfection. It's Carolyn McLeod, I think is her name, the casting director. Oh. McLeod. But she's brilliant, and I think it was perfect. Pitch perfect. All of it. The things that took me out with the acting, though, I think I had that like nervousness for them when it first started, but then I forgot about that, which is testament to how good they were and how slick it was and how good the acting was. The bits that took me out weren't moments from the actors who were the leads. The bits that took me out of it were actually the smaller roles. Like the influencers, I just found them to be a little bit too overcooked, and that's probably a nerve thing as well. It's like, oh God, it's been happening for an hour and now is my time, and they're coming to me and the camera's going to be on me. And maybe that was what it was.
Because like, yeah, fair enough if Stephen like does a mistake. Like he's been going for like an hour or so, like fair play, he'd probably be knackered. But if you just had like one line and you came on and you messed it up and you like, yeah, and they couldn't carry on.
It's like the tone of it, right? I think that everyone in the kitchen were being so real. It was almost like you're watching a documentary.
Yeah.
And like, even though I know Stephen Graham is an actor, like I just was completely with him being a head chef of this restaurant. And like, and I just, it was so real. The arguments, like the way that they interacted with one another, it was so free, never overdone, never someone trying to get a last word in. Like it was just like, it was perfect. And then, yeah, you get to some of the moments and you think, oh, this feels like they're pretending to do, like to come out for a meal, or they're pretending to order a bottle of wine or like whatever. And it just takes you out of it.
Well, this is something that I, maybe you know, and would like to ask Phil also. It felt improv'd. The dialogue.
Hey, yeah, how much of it was written?
I did read something that it was like, it wasn't fully script. It was more like beats to hit.
They got room for mistakes then as well, because they just stay in character, but also like testament to how brilliant the acting was, because they probably did make mistakes, but we didn't know.
This is something that I think is really interesting. What is the actress's name who was in Les Mis for
Anne Hathaway?
Anne Hathaway. So Anne Hathaway, when she was doing her song for Les Mis, doing I Dreamed a Dream, they did it maybe like, I can't remember how many times, but an insane amount of times. And then they ended up going with like one of the like first or second, third takes. And it like, yeah, they sort of went through a whole thing and then just like ended up going back to the one that like they left. I mean, they didn't do a million takes in this, but it's so interesting that like actually sometimes it's about like the repetition and then you break through it and you find something new. But sometimes it's like something about the, like, oh, we have another one after this, so I'm going to just go easy on myself because we still have one more take, that just makes everyone lighten up a little bit. Mm. So interesting. Yeah. Can't wait to hear more from Philip.
Yeah.
About
that. Yeah. On why it was. Mm.
Did they mic the location?
I don't think so. I think it was just radio mics and then one boom, because really, they were like, really, the boom didn't really capture much apart from just like air, like room tone.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And more like gave it a bit more space. But they would have had more booms, but it was so risky for like an accidental boom to be in shot and then suddenly the shot's done as well. So, they just had the one.
Yeah, I just want to know about batteries as well, the camera battery, like the mic, like even radio mic batteries. Yeah. I feel like a radio mic, when I'm on set, lasts until about lunchtime and then you have to change it. So maybe they could it could last for like the whole take. But what if someone's just like died before the end? Like,
I don't know about the microphones, but the camera they shot on Sony Venice, which means, and that camera you can change the battery whilst it's rolling, and the same with like the SD cards, so they could like just keep.
We're living in 2045.
Yeah,
wow.
I know.
I'd love to know how we did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where we got it from.
We'll find out.
What's your tips?
Well, I feel like we should go and chat to Phil.
Definitely.
Yes.
Many questions for Phil.
Yeah.
Let's get him on.
Amazing. We are now joined by the writer and director of Boiling Point, Phil Barantini. Welcome
Thank
to
you
Frank
very
Film
much.
Club.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
We've just been talking all about the film and, well, actually, we've got loads of questions for you. So
cool.
I'm just going to jump straight in because we gave you a great intro at the start of the
podcast. Oh, right.
Yeah. You'll hear it.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Where did the story come from? I feel like this is also a part of your intro because I feel like it came a lot from you.
Yeah, totally from me. I was an actor for 25 years. You know, when you get into an industry like that, you know, you want to be successful. And I was relatively successful to begin with. You know, I became a bit complacent because I was doing really well as an actor. And then I wasn't going to turn up for auditions, or I was turning up late, or I didn't know the lines, or, you know, that kind of thing. And so I started to, you know, I wasn't getting the work, and I started to become bitter and jealous of other people who were getting the work and that kind of thing. So I needed to make some money. And the pub that I was working in, in Hackney, I was actually working behind the bar, and my best mate was the manager there. And the sous chef got fired one day, and they knew that I was passionate about food because I was constantly talking to the chefs and, like, you know. So they made a joke on me, and they basically fired me that day and said, "We can't have you working in the bar." And as I was walking out the door, the chef came over and went, "Do you want a job?" And they planned it, you know what I mean? So then I started working in kitchens, and I loved it, and it just fell in love with it all.
Can you unpack like what that journey is actually like? Because I think like what this film captures is like the real sort of just like hostile environment, but to work your way up and become like a head chef, like what is that journey really like?
It is. It's tough at times, but also it's like, you know, there's the whole like family side of it and the camaraderie and everyone's together. Because of that family environment, you sort of neglect your real family or, you know, what's outside of that world, and it becomes your everything. And so, you know, me having that addictive personality and being, you know, drinking a lot and stuff like that it's not a good environment to be in, you know. Mm-mm. And so I went down a downward spiral, and, you know, I was starting out, when I was starting out, everyone was doing it, everyone was drinking, everyone was doing drugs and things like that. And it was like it was a thing that we did during shifts and stuff like that. And then it got to a point where it was like, it was just me doing it. There was fights, there was, you know, there was sadness, there was people committing suicide, things like that. Just like that you don't necessarily see or go through in any other job, really. So, And I hadn't quit acting. And I'd always wanted to direct, but I never had the confidence to do it. And then 7 years ago, I decided to quit drinking, and I, you know, I tried to do it for many years. People had always said to me, "Oh, you need to stop. You need to do this. You need to do that." And I'd be like, "Yeah, no, I will. Yeah, of course, I know I do. I should do. Yeah, I should do." But I never really wanted to, and you know, I'm not cured. Mm. But a year later, my mum passed away quite suddenly, and it just made me go, "Fuck this! What am I doing? Like, go and follow your dreams. Do what you want to do."
Mm.
Just try and direct, like, do it, you know what I mean? So I got in touch with a mate of mine, who's a producer, who produced Boiling Point.
Mm.
And he said, I was like, "Can you recommend any good film schools I could go to learn, you know, how to be a director?" He's like, "Mate, you've been on film sets for 25 years, you know what you know, hit marks is, you know, the different types of lenses, the camera angles, all this kind of stuff." I was like, yeah, I do, yeah. He's like, "Well, you don't need to go then." I was like, okay. So I just decided to make a short, and a mate of mine had sent me this lovely script about a young boxer, and I just said, "This is what I want to do." That's where it sort of came from. Like, I'd lived and breathed it, you know.
Mm.
And I wanted to. I'd seen films about chefs or kitchens or, you know, and some of them were great, but not my experience, what I personally went through and what I've seen and witnessed, you know. So I wanted to make something that was true to my reality and a lot of other people's realities that they've been through, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not everyone's reality. You know, some people have said, "Oh, it's not like that in the kitchens anymore," which is fine, but some kitchens it is. I know it is.
Yeah.
Because I've got mates who are still in the kitchens and they're still struggling and still, you know, it's rubbish.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense when you hear that for context, because it feels like there's a richness to all of the little things that are happening around the restaurant that feel like they can only come from a lived experience.
Mm.
How did you construct that story?
I'd written the short, like, basically just in my notes in my phone while I was away. I was acting in a show out in Lithuania. I was just in the hotel one day, and I just put an anecdote down and stuff like that. And then I spoke to my DP who I'd worked on the first short with, and I was like, "Right, we've got to do this, and it's got to be real and visceral and, you know, proper, almost like a thriller." And then he sort of came up with the idea of doing it in one shot, one take, which I thought he was mental. And, you know, I pitched that to Stephen as well, and he thought I was mental. And, you know, there was just a massive list of things that kind of, some of them are unbelievable, you know what I mean? But, like, so we just went through it and thought, right, what could be this journey? And we said, if we're going to do it in one take, it has to be a slice of life, you know, something that's going to change his life forever, like a heart attack or whatever. Mm. Because I'd seen someone have a heart attack in front of me in work, like a guy in his 30s, because he was, you know, burning the candle at both ends, doing drugs and all that stuff.
And you started rehearsing once you got into the space. Yeah, how important was that space to the story? And, like, is there anything that you had to rework or change, like, once you got it on its feet? And how was it working with the actors in that
Well,
way?
It's really important in a film like that to get the location first before we started writing the script. So, you know, my mate Andy Jones, the real Andy Jones, who owns Jones & Sons, I'd worked in that kitchen before, I'd worked in that restaurant before, so I knew it kind of inside out. And I just asked him, I said, "Look, could we film in in here? And he was like, yeah, absolutely, yeah, you know, just give me some money to shut it down. And then we sort of wrote the script around that location. It was important to do that. And then myself and James Cummings, who I co-wrote it with, we just sat in the space like for every, like 2 days a week or something like that, and just for weeks, and just wrote it in there, and then, you know, lived and breathed it. And, you know, we were watching the chefs work and stuff like that. And we did all the auditions in there. And then we got the actors into to workshop. We got anyone who was playing sort of front of house characters, like the waiters or the customers or you know, the bar staff or whatever. They came in and did 5 days, and we just worked on their little moments. And then we sort of, then we got all the kitchen staff in, and Stephen and Vanette and everybody. And then we did all their little moments over a day, I think. And then we just sort of built it in layers then.
Do you think that you would ever do one take again for a feature?
If you'd have asked me that, like, the week after we wrapped, I'd have said no, but I would, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, did you find that, like, because obviously it's so, you have to prepare the tech, like, as well as all the creative, yeah, so much. Do you think, did you feel that ever, like, took away from the creative, or did it help, like, what was that balance like?
No, it was, I knew it was important from day one that, you know, everything had to work together in harmony. I do know what I like to look at. I've got an amazing team that I work with that can, you know, bring that to life, and we all collaborate together. So myself and Matt Lewis, who's my DOP, and he operated the camera, we would go, while we were writing it, he would come in some days and we would go, right, we just got to practice this move. And I would then be all the characters. And I'd be like, right, and then she goes over there, and then we're in the kitchen. And sometimes when the kitchen was shut, the restaurant was shut, we'd still be in there. And then when we were rehearsing with the actors, it was important to have all the crew in there as well. Mm. You know, because if someone, the like the boom operators and all the sound team, they need to know where they need to be. And so it was important. It's like a dance, you know, it's like a choreographed dance that you have to sort of, everyone has to work with each other and, mm-hmm, and move with each other. It was tough to sort of manage all of that, and the actors as well. But like I say, I have an amazing team.
And when you came to shoot it, how many takes did you do? And which take did you go with?
Yeah.
And why?
So Stephen had a window because he was about to go on to do Peaky Blinders. And he was going to do Peaky Blinders in March. So we were planning to shoot in April, and we were all heading towards April, the April shoot. And then suddenly, like, I think a month before or whatever, Stephen was like, can we move it? Because the dates have been moved. Can we move it to March? And so we gave ourselves, we were going to shoot it over 4 nights. And the plan was to do the film twice every night. And so we were going to do it 8 times in total. So I'd have had 8 movies to choose from. But after the first night, you know, COVID was becoming really scary at that moment. And we had loads of people in this one space at one time. And people were getting really nervous. And we lost a couple of, like, cast members because they were living with elderly parents, and they were scared. And, you know, at this point, no one was saying wear masks or anything. It was just literally,
yeah,
wash your hands.
Yeah.
And we were coming in every morning, hugging each other. And we were like a family, you know,
yeah,
you know. After we'd done it in the first two goes at it, and we got to the end, and it was fine, and it was good. But in my mind, I'm like, these are just like dress rehearsals because we've got another 6 goes at this. Mm. And then the night of the first night, like late, the producers just called me and said, we're going to have to shut this down tomorrow. We'll do it one more night, and then that's it. We've got to call it. I didn't tell everyone because I didn't want them to be, because it's already pressure enough, yeah, to go, you know, especially actors, you know, if you're in the whole thing and you're like Stephen, for example, or Vanette or whatever, but even if you're like, I don't know, the paramedics at the end,
right,
you're sat there waiting, you don't want to mess up at the last minute. So I didn't want to tell everyone. So we came in and we did it. We did the third take is the performances were amazing, but technically there was a few things that I wasn't too happy with. The fourth take, the last one, was flawless, technically flawless. But when we watched it back, it was like the acting was good, but it was flat, slightly flatter, because people were exhausted, you know.
Yeah. Second take of the day.
Yeah, exactly. So so then we literally wrapped and I went back to Manchester. I watched all four takes and there was a bit of back and forth. Like Matt, the DP, was crying. He actually cried down the phone to me. He said, please don't use the third one. Please don't use the third one.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah,
well, there was like three major things really, which nobody has ever noticed.
No.
And one of them was the clock in the kitchen was the wrong time. We fixed it with VFX.
Huh.
And it's very expensive to fix the hand on a clock. So it was like 5 o'clock. I think it said 4 o'clock on when we did it, but it was supposed to be like 6 o'clock or something like that.
Right.
Because like, if anyone's going to notice, they're going to be like, why is the restaurant so busy at 4 o'clock? Why is it dark at 4 o'clock?
You know? It's one of those things that might take you out of it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then the other thing was Rob, the character Robin, who's the actress, the blonde waitress, comes in. And she comes from the back kitchen into the front kitchen. There's a moment where the camera goes slightly soft, but it goes soft for just a tiny bit too long, like for my liking. And I was like, we tried to fix it in post and tried to sharpen it up, but we just couldn't. And I was like, oh, it's going to take everyone out of it. And then the other major one was when the manager is going into the toilet to cry in the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
On the other takes, the door was open when she walked in. So we left it, wedged it open so that Matt, the camera operator, could follow her in and like just be sat. And he had a mark on the floor where he had to start. So there was also a hand dryer on the wall with a reflective mirror, basically, on the thing that you put your hand in. And so we put him in a specific mark so that he wouldn't be seen in that. And also so that the door didn't hit him. But on this take, the door was closed. So she opened it and she's in the moment, you know what I mean? So she's not even thinking about the camera. So she's in the moment and Matt just got knocked ever so slightly. So there's a slight wobble on the camera and then he's off his mark. So he's trying to find the mark and so it was just a little bit too like frantic. So we tried to fix that as well. And it's nothing major now, but at the time it was like everything to me. Yeah.
But if someone had said to you, you got four takes to get this right, before you went into, you'd be like, nah.
Absolutely not.
I need double. Yeah, it's mad.
Yeah.
Mad.
I wanted to ask you about how much was scripted with the dialogue and how much was improvised. And if it was improvised, what were the, like, how strict were the beats and how did you communicate all of that?
James and I worked meticulously to get the beats down. And within those beats were bullet points, and it was quite extensive what needed to be communicated within those beats. And so when we workshopped it with the actors and we got them to be in the moment and to you know, perform those beats. And then James wrote the basics down into the script, what the actors were coming up with. I just said to them, look, I don't want you to be bogged down by this dialogue, because, you know, if you're in a moment and you're trying to remember lines and then you fluff a line and you're like, oh no, fluff the line, can we go again? No, you can't go again. Please don't go again. So I didn't want it to be too rigid for them. And that it was important to find actors who could work in that way, because not everyone can, you know. But we needed to find actors that could be in the moment. And you know, I studied the Meisner technique as an actor, and that's how I sort of direct now as well. Direct actors, you know, I bring that into that as well. And I think it's not for everybody, but like I certainly think if you can sort of tune into the other person as opposed to keeping the attention on you, because you know, a lot of actors they get a script, they learn the lines, they learn everything, you know. And they practice it in the mirror, whatever, you know, they practice it at home, and it's like every single arm movement or, you know, a blink is rehearsed, and there's no getting away from that with some actors. You can't like pull them away from it. So it was really important to find actors that could be in the moment.
A slightly different question, but one thing that was just like the whole way through, I just couldn't get my head around, was how did you do the food? Was it real?
Yeah.
It was real. Were they cooking?
Oh no, they weren't cooking. No.
So how did you do it?
So we had an amazing chef friend of mine called Tom Brown, who owns a restaurant in in Hackney Wick called Cornerstone. So they pre-cooked everything, and you know, some of the plates were already set under in the fridges underneath, so none of it was hot, you know. And then, yeah, it was just we had the burners on and the ovens on, but like, you know, if you really paid attention to it, like most of it was just cremated or like, you know.
Really?
So yeah, and so a lot of it was set already.
That's mad. Yeah, because that seems like a whole other task. Like the food must have been, like you've got all the other tech, all the other, like the creative, and then the food is just like another task to
add to it.
Yeah,
another layer of stress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're developing a television show, which is based on this same material.
Yeah.
How is that going? What can you share?
Yeah, basically after the film, the BBC, someone at the BBC got in contact with me and said, have you thought about turning this into a TV series? I was like, yeah. Yeah. Why? What do you want?
Yeah.
And they were like, well, we'd love to commission a script. And I was like, okay, amazing. And so we had sort of talked about it, but only like jokingly, really. Oh, we're going to do the TV series next. And so we did have some ideas and stuff. And then they commissioned the script, and me and James went away, and Stephen as well. Stephen came on board. So Stephen's one of the creators with us now. We sent the script in, and they greenlit it, and we were like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, mental. Well. And then it's 5 episodes, BBC One, and the story sort of, it's 6 months after what happened at the end of the film, and it sort of focuses, each episode focuses on a different character, loosely, but it's mostly Vanette Robinson's character who played Carly, and she's now the head chef of a brand new restaurant, which is owned by an entrepreneur, young city banker, who doesn't really know anything about the industry, bought this restaurant so he could show off to his mates. Now we're bringing some of the characters back, quite a few of them, and you know, we sort of see them in their personal lives, and you know where they are now, and that kind of thing. So it's very much like still like a slice of life, you know, very grounded and hopefully relatable. And
so is Stephen Graham's character in it and alive?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
He is. He has suffered a major heart attack, and he's now in recovery. So he'll be in it. He's gonna be in it, peppered across the series. So he'll be in a few scenes across the series. So he's not the main focus. And do you know what? Stephen is such an amazing human being. Like he could have easily said, "Yeah, I'll be the lead in it," and I'll be. But he said he wants to give the opportunity to the other actors that we brought on. You know, some of them had not really done much work before, and he wants to give them a platform. You know. So he's just amazing, and he's one of the creators with me and James, so he's very very much across the story with us. And but yeah, so it's been mad. It's mad.
That's mad. Well, exciting.
Every day I'm just like, what is going on?
It's actually not that short of a span of time as well. Like,
no,
it doesn't. You know, the short being made in 2018.
Yeah,
that doesn't feel like that long ago for it to now be greenlit as a TV series.
No, I know.
Yeah. And have a film in between there somewhere as well.
Yeah,
mad.
Well, I can't quite believe like what's going on with me, because I decided to jump off the cliff, I always say, and just, you know, I'm still flapping my wings now, but, you know, I'm floating. I also feel like, you know, without sounding, I mean, I believe in sort of energy and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, I feel like, it feels like this is my purpose, and this is why I was an actor for 25 years. And I was so, even though I was struggling as an actor sometimes, I was still so passionate about the world and how it is all made. And, you know, I'd always stay behind after my scene had finished and sit with the director and be like, can I just hang out? And I'd be subconsciously watching everybody and interested in how it was all made, you know? Mm. Yeah.
Feels mad. Like it's all happening. All of that is for this reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's built up.
Yeah.
I wonder, how are you finding it? Like, how is your mental health now? Because this is, like, skyrocketed and it's everything that you could have wanted it to be, but that's also hard to deal with at times, I imagine.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think because my acting career, I wanted it and I messed it up. So now I think I'm in a mindset where I'm like, I'm not going to get complacent. Like every day I'm like, okay, this is mental. I'm just like, you know, every day is just crazy. And but yeah, I guess I'm trying to stay as grounded as I possibly can. I've got an amazing family. My wife and daughter and all my family are just incredible. Like my dad doesn't give a crap, but I'm, you know what I mean? I'm like, he's like, what have you been up to? And I'll explain something and he'd be like, great. Yeah, great. And, well, and I love it, you know what I mean? It's like, I love it. And I think, yeah, it is tough, but I'm trying to stay focused. And I think not drinking and doing that is, like, God knows where I'd be. Mm. It's a massive help to sort of mental health. And I I have my off days. Everyone has their off days. And, you know, sometimes you just want to stay in bed and do nothing and block everything out and stuff. But then I just sort of feel how lucky I am as well, you know.
Well,
amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been fab.
Thank
I love you. Hearing all about this. And I can't wait to hear. I feel like we need to do another one when you've
do the TV.
Made
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
it.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'd love
that. The chat.
I'd love that, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
wow.
That was such a good chat.
Such an interesting guy.
Yeah, what a great guy. Yeah. What do you guys think after all of that? Like, what have you come to conclude about this film and the journey and yeah?
I'm so glad that we've had him in to talk about it. I think probably even for us, like, you get a little bit not caught up in, but the initial conversation is about the filmmaking process, which is such an interesting conversation. But when it boils down to it,
ding, 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 ding.
Like, what it's actually about is just as important, if not, like, you know, more important when it comes from somebody like Phil. Mm. And I just really appreciate and admire the richness. Also, something I noticed that he was talking about, he filmed that in a place where he worked. So, like, he went back to the place that the story was based on. Like, I wonder how cathartic or, like, traumatic that was to be there with a camera filming, like, potentially what he felt like when he was living that lifestyle.
It's the reason why it was so magnetic is because, like, he was really speaking from his soul. And, like, we talk about this a lot, about, like, a film from a new perspective when someone has, like, lived and breathed it. Is when it, like, really captures you as an audience, because it's, like, it's honest. Mm. And so, yeah, it was just, I loved hearing more about his personal journey. And I think it's really felt through this film, despite it being one shot and the complications, like, at the soul is this story of being, like, completely at your boiling point.
Oh, no, I'm completely the same. Like, I really wonder if, like, when he's spoken about this film before, if people do ask him about the story at all, or if they do just talk about the, like, how it was made, because it's so easy to fall into that. But it's so good. But I feel like there's a lot of filmmakers that would be like, we're going to make a one-shot film for the sake of making a one-shot film. Yeah. What could it be?
Yeah.
And then think of it that way around. But it's so obviously come from the other way around, and that's why it works so well, and that even if you did go see it because it's the one-shot film, you're going to be so pulled into it, and you're not, like, after it, you're going to know it for, like, a very different reason. And yeah, he's great. I'm so excited to see the series and, like, everything else that he does.
Yeah.
Really, really special. One to watch for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you are affected by any of the talking points that we discussed, then we have some support links in the description box, so go and look at that. Next week, we are going to be watching Everything Everywhere All at Once, which came out this year and was directed by The Daniels. And you can watch it on Amazon Prime, but it's incredible. Go and watch it. And we are going to get back here to discuss all, to dive into the nitty-gritty and find out how they made such a huge scale movie on such a small budget.
Amazing.
Exciting. Whoop. See you then.
Bye-bye.
This podcast was presented by Wrapped.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.